Our news at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Calling it the compassionate and right policy for New Hampshire, Governor Maggie Hassan last week signed a medical marijuana bill into law, making the Granite State the 19th in the nation and the last in New England to allow limited use of cannabis for health reasons. But compared to other states, our law is considered one of the strictest. For example, there's no grow-your-own option. Also, just a short list of illnesses qualify for a pot prescription, and doctors can only recommend the drug after other treatments have failed. Still, it's a huge step for New Hampshire, and now, with medical marijuana officially on the books, different groups are gearing up to make sure this new system is put in place correctly. Police are looking at how they'll distinguish between legal and illegal pot use. Local zoning boards will have to consider where it might be appropriate to have dispensaries and where it wouldn't be. Doctors are trying to figure out what this means for their practices and their patients. And perhaps the biggest job in this first phase falls to the state's Health and Human Services Department. DHHS is in charge of licensing and regulating the four dispensaries the law calls for, and for setting up rules for who can get an official cannabis prescription card. Today in The Exchange, the Granite State gets down to business with medical marijuana. Let's hear from you. What questions do you have about what this law includes, how it works? Also, how do you feel about the fact that New Hampshire has joined the rest of New England on this? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests with us for the hour. Donna Schlackman is here, Democratic State Representative from Exeter, primary sponsor of the medical marijuana bill. And Representative Schlackman, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here, Laura. Thank you.
Also with us, Dr. Stuart Glassman, rehabilitation specialist at Granite Physiatry, adjunct assistant professor at Dartmouth Medical School and president-elect of the New Hampshire Medical Society. And Dr. Glassman, good to see you, and thank you for being here as well.
You too, Laura. Thank you.
Well, and Representative Schlack, I want to start with you since this is your bill. How big a change is this for New Hampshire to join this growing group of states allowing medical marijuana?
Well, it's a tremendous step forward for New Hampshire. There are a lot of patients that have been waiting for almost a decade for us to take this step and should be celebrating the fact that we have at least passed a law that will give us dispensaries, or as we call them, alternative treatment centers, and finally give them some access that's legal and safe.
Given that New Hampshire's gone around and around on this for many years, were you surprised that it ultimately was passed and signed by the governor last week?
Not at all surprised. I think that the governor did a very clear job in signaling that she was open to the right law arriving at her desk. We worked tremendous hours in the House through the committee process to try to craft a piece of legislation that had the safeguards that the governor was concerned about and law enforcement was concerned about and the medical society was concerned about, that they would be there. The bill did, as you know, got changed a bit in the Senate. The self-grow provision was taken out. Again, the governor was very clear that that was the piece that made her the most nervous. And so once those things were in place, it was clear that we had a piece of legislation arriving at her desk that she was going to sign.
How do doctors in general, obviously you can't speak for everybody, Dr. Glassman, but you are president-elect of the New Hampshire Medical Society. How is the society feeling now that this law has passed?
Well, I think we understand that when the bill first came out, there were some concerns we had. I think as the bill evolved over time, we were able to give support to most of the provisions. I think we also understand that there's going to be a learning curve going forward about how this is going to play out in the real world, how we're going to provide another option for treatment for the patients that we treat, and also in working with Health and Human Services and the Board of Medicine, how we're going to at least try to create a system that really does make sense for the physicians that will be certifying these conditions and ultimately hopefully providing better care for the patients that may benefit from this.
And when you say these conditions, we should say that not only is there no home grow option, Representative Schlackman, but there's also a limited number of conditions for which medical marijuana would be allowed. Just remind us what those conditions are.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that one of the things, that the advantages of being one of the last states, and certainly the last New England state, is that we have learned that we needed to tighten up our conditions. That one of the concerns we were hearing from law enforcement and from the medical community was the fact that they didn't want a situation where anybody could get certified. So we're talking about cancer, glaucoma, HIV, hepatitis C, muscular dystrophy, ALS, chronic diseases, chronic pancreatitis, rather, and also then certain symptoms that go along with this.
Yeah, so a list of, you know, half a dozen very serious illnesses.
Very serious
that cause
illnesses.
A lot of suffering.
Yeah.
So how do doctors feel about that list, Dr. Glassman?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, if you look at what are the symptoms that are really being treated primarily, you're looking at issues of pain, typically neuropathic pain. You're looking at cachexia, anorexia, which are medical terms, but really wasting, loss of muscle mass, nausea, vomiting, and muscle spasms. That's sort of the general areas that a lot of these diagnoses all have in common. I think the important thing to understand for our listeners is that, you know, therapeutic cannabis, it's not going to cure these diseases at all. It's going to hopefully treat some of the symptoms that we've described possibly differently, hopefully better than other medical accepted options that are available right now.
Now, you used an interesting word there, Dr. Glassman, and I want to follow up on that. Therapeutic cannabis. In fact, the act officially, it's called medical marijuana in shorthand, but officially it's called an act relative to the use of therapeutic cannabis. Why is that language distinction important, Dr. Glassman?
Right. So the reason is because therapeutic cannabis is not a drug that's FDA approved. It hasn't gone through rigorous studies to eventually be able to be called a medicine. There's no prescribing of it in this system. It's going to be a certification of a diagnosis. There have not been the studies and the controlled trials that you have to have in order for a medication in the United States to ultimately be passed by the FDA. So that's why the first line of this bill is not medical marijuana, but it's therapeutic cannabis, and there's a big distinction between the two. Safety of production, uniform, safety for the creation of the cannabis, those are things that right now there's no way of controlling it. So that's why the term was used.
So it's not gone through the rigorous study and control and so forth that other drugs have gone through, and that's why it's called that. How do you feel as a doctor then prescribing this? It is different.
Right. Well, physicians will not be prescribing cannabis. They'll be certifying the diagnosis, which then will allow that patient to go to the alternative treatment center to then receive the cannabis itself. So there's not going to be any prescribing per se.
So you're sort of giving somebody the okay to go get that card.
Right, to get into the system that they'll follow through with.
Yeah, do you want to follow up on that,
Representative Schlafly? Well, I think that he explained it very, very clearly, and this is one of the things that we worked out in the hearing process, is that we couldn't call it a medicine because medicines come with certain parameters that this doesn't qualify for. So, yes, the doctors and the nurse practitioners are certifying that the patient has a condition that qualifies under this law for them to apply for the card. And I should add that there is another not qualifying condition, but a place in the law where it says if a doctor is working with a patient who they feel will benefit, or maybe they already know they've benefited from cannabis because the patient's already taking it on their own, but they don't fit into those very strict definitions that we talked about before, they can go ahead and certify them, and then the Department of Health and Human Services will determine whether to issue the card.
So there's a little wiggle room.
There is
on
a
that
little
list
wiggle
of
room
conditions.
In the list, exactly, because we heard from patients with conditions that don't fit into our definition. There's a disease that's a nerve disease, RDS or something like that.
Complex regional pain syndrome.
Okay. Where people are in chronic pain, and this has been a successful way of treating it, but it doesn't fit into our definition as it is. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of a way that doctors can work with or nurses can work with their patients and make sure they still have access.
How concerned are you, Representative Schlafly, that there's a little wiggle room in who can get it and who can't beyond that list of a half a dozen or so conditions, that slowly more and more people will keep applying for this case by case basis, to the point where people who perhaps don't really need it will be lobbying hard to get it?
Well, I'm sure there are people who will lobby hard to get it that aren't on this list. We heard a lot from people with post-traumatic stress disorder that are able to get it in other states and can't here. And so there's a big concern. I know Representative Jim McKay, who chaired the Committee of Conference, was advocating that this disorder be included. So, yeah, there will be patients. But again, one of the things that's in this law is an advisory council that's going to look into that thing, that's going to monitor what's happening, who's getting it, who isn't. Are we serving the needs of patients? Because this is ultimately the only reason for this law is to serve the needs of patients. So if there is a legitimate patient group that's being left out, there is a mechanism for looking into this and seeing if we need to do some tweaking to the legislation.
And that advisory council is being set up. It should be set up soon, from what
I understand.
It should,
within 45 minutes of the passage, and it was signed on July 23rd, so the clock is ticking.
Well, and Dr. Glassman, what have you heard from doctors in other states which have this, about how they approach this issue, which patients really need it, which patients do not, especially those who are not on New Hampshire's current approved list?
Right. Well, I haven't had a lot of discussion with other states' physicians, but I think our medical society did interact with some of the other states to really find out, you know, trials, tribulations, what was working, what wasn't working. And I think one of the big states that was looked at was Oregon, and the concern of opening the floodgates of physicians or nurse practitioners for the New Hampshire bill, you know, being the access for really, you know, legalized marijuana and recreational use. If you look at Oregon, you've got probably half the patients in the state going to basically nine physicians. That's a lot of people who are being seen, and they're not being seen for very long in the course of a year. So the concern was how to have, you know, the certifying clinicians, which in New Hampshire's law are physicians and advanced practice nurse practitioners, to not really be sort of the gatekeepers for legalization or recreational use. So I think that was one of the big issues that we as the society really looked at to make sure it didn't happen with the legislation.
And some of you will be serving on this advisory board, as I understand, so
yes,
you'll be keeping
yes.
an eye on that. I know you want to jump in, Representative Schlackman. I'll let you do it after a very short break, okay? And we'll take your calls, too, after that break. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. We want your questions and comments about New Hampshire's new medical marijuana law. 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR's summer car raffle is almost over. Our grand prize, $25,000 toward a new car, a Grupponi Automotive Group. Put yourself in the running and support the new service you rely on when you get your raffle tickets, $50 each or three for $100. Call 1-888-805-NHPR or nhpr.org to get your tickets today. Partly sunny today, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs lower 70s in the North Country, ranging to upper 70s in southern parts of the state, mostly clear tonight, lows upper 40s from the mountains north, mid-50s to around 60 for the remainder of the state. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Conway Scenic Railroad, celebrating its 39th year, featuring fine dining on the Notch train. Schedules, menus, and ticket information online at conwayscenic.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, what the new medical marijuana law means for New Hampshire. We invite you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. Now that Governor Hassan has signed this into law, what questions do you have about how it'll work here in New Hampshire? What the law includes, what it doesn't? Also, just how you feel about the fact that New Hampshire has joined other New England states in doing this. Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Representative Schlackman, before we go to the phones, I did want to give you a chance to follow up on some of the concerns Dr. Glassman was raising, that in other states, we've seen a handful of physicians and nurse practitioners kind of become, pardon the expression, the pot docs. You know, they're the ones that you go to, and they'll basically give you a card, even if you have, you know,
right,
a hangnail.
And in the hearing process, the Medical Society voiced that concern. And one of the things that we did is we took some language that they suggested regarding patients and doctor relationships, and that there needs to be a full evaluation of the patient as there is when the doctor treats any other disorder, and a treatment plan. And we also have a tracking system through the dispensaries, through DHHS, through the advisory committee that's going to look at who's prescribing, what diseases are being treated, how many of each category, so that if there are some red flags and somebody says, gee, there's this one doctor that seems to be doing all the prescribing and they're doing too many exceptions to the law, that can be reported to the medical society, the medical board, or the nursing board, so that that can be looked into.
So the advisory council isn't just helping get this law up and going. It's an ongoing group that's continually monitoring this law.
Exactly, monitoring it in all different ways.
All right, let's take some calls. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Colleen is first from Manchester. Hi, Colleen. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, this is a really good conversation to have. I feel like it's a positive move, and I think it's good that it's going to be well-regulated. But I'm concerned. I thought that MS and glaucoma were on the list.
And you think they should be, Colleen?
Yes, I have MS, but I wouldn't necessarily take it because I'm under control right now with the medication I take. But I like the idea of having the option. And that is one medication, one illness where marijuana has been shown to be effective in relieving some of the pain and muscle spasms and anorexia and cachexia that can be associated with MS. And I'm also in the medical field, so I think it's really important. I've worked detox. I've worked hospice. Detox, I think it's a bad idea for there to be marijuana available to anybody like in Oregon. And hospice, I feel like it's really important for there to be marijuana available for people who are, you know, sick and suffering and the morphine isn't cutting it.
Are you a nurse or a doctor, Colleen?
I'm a nurse.
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you for calling in. Two questions. One, Representative Schlackman, MS and glaucoma, she says they should be on the list.
Well, and my apologies, Colleen. They actually are on the list. When I was talking about what was on it, I wasn't very complete in reading all of them. So those two disorders, diseases are on the list. And I want to thank you as a hospicelist nurse because we heard a lot, I heard a lot, got a lot of phone calls from hospice nurses going into this, wanting this to be available to their patients.
Yeah, and good luck with your own condition, Colleen. That's hard. And Dr. Glassman, the hospice concern, what do you think? These are people who are usually at the end of life and who are really suffering.
Right. And Colleen, yes, you know, as the representative mentioned, you know, multiple sclerosis, traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injury, ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis are also on the list as well, as some other diagnoses. I think the hospice issue is something to consider. Certainly the issue of chronic, you know, moderate to severe nausea, vomiting, muscle wasting, that is certainly one of the issues where the question about therapeutic cannabis as an option was brought up. So that, you know, patients who are in long-term, you know, hospice care would have options to be able to at least maintain their nutrition so that hopefully their quality of life is improved. It is important for the listeners to understand that right now there are FDA-approved cannabinoid medications that are available, that are being used. Dronabinol, which is also called Marinol, is one of the two or three medication options that clinicians, including nurse practitioners and physicians, can prescribe right now. And actually, a study came out in April from Columbia University that showed that those FDA-approved medications actually provided longer pain control than the inhaled smoked marijuana. So there are options right now, even with this bill being passed, for some of those patients that are in the hospice setting.
Well, and Representative Schlackman, this is something that came up during the many hearings on this bill, that there are researched, approved, gone through the process, marijuana-related drugs, if I could call them that. Why aren't those good enough?
Well, what we heard from patients is that Marinol doesn't work for a lot of them, that the dosing is really difficult to control, and that when you take it, when you ingest something, it takes longer for it to have an effect, whereas if you smoke it, It's very quick. So for some patients, they need very quick relief. And so the Marinol is not as effective. And there are side effects, and there are actually deaths from Marinol.
All right. Let's go back to our listeners again. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Now that New Hampshire has a medical marijuana law on the books, we want your questions and comments about it. One of the voices that's been chiming in a lot on this bill is law enforcement. And joining us now is Andrew Shigorny. He's Tufton Borough's police chief. And Chief Shigorny, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Glad to be here, part of this important discussion.
Well, now that it's on the books, what are some of the biggest concerns or questions that you and law enforcement have?
Well, one is the list. As Representative Schlachtman just mentioned, there is a process to get around the strict requirements. There's also pain due to injuries. I believe if you look at other states, that's been a huge loophole. If you look at Oregon, out of 55,000 medical marijuana patients, 54,000 are for severe pain. And if you also look in there, there's a 90-day, supposed to be a 90-day or three-month physician-provider patient relationship. And there is actually, for sudden onset, which would be an injury, there is a way around that. And along with that, there's restrictions on information we can share. I think that would hinder investigations, not just marijuana investigations, but other investigations. And when you start looking at some of the restrictions on law enforcement, it's basically, in my opinion, going to be a form of de facto legalization through restrictions on what we can and can't seize. I don't think it's constitutional, that section, and it'll have to be fought out through the courts, I think.
Can you give us a little bit more on that, please, Chief Shigorny, the idea that you are restricted by this?
Well, there's a section that talks about we can only seize the marijuana beyond what's legally allowed. The problem with that is the definition of under this statute is not the same as the definition under 318B, which basically includes what is commonly called shake, non-smokable parts. This law says that we can only seize that beyond it. So if we found somebody with 3 ounces of marijuana and their medical marijuana card carrier, by this law that just passed, 126W, it says we can only seize the 1 ounce beyond the 2 ounces that a card carrier is allowed to have. Well, the problem with that is when we go into court, we have to be able to provide all the evidence. Somebody has a right to examine all the evidence against them. And we have to be able to prove that the 2 ounces that we didn't seize is usable marijuana and not usable cannabis, not unusable cannabis under 126W. It's largely going to be unworkable, and it's going to be, I think, take court action and decisions to weigh that out. That's been a problem in Oregon and other states.
You know, talking about other states, Chief Shigorny, how much have you heard from your colleagues in other states which have this already? Again, New Hampshire's now 119. Yeah. Now that it's there, though, what have you heard about how they're doing with it?
Has handcuffed them to the point where they can't enforce a lot of the marijuana laws if somebody gets one of these cards, or we're going to recognize out of state. One of the problems I have with this bill is that it's being sold as being very strict. Yet if you look at other states, we're not one of the strictest. We're one of the few states that allow nurse practitioners to give it. I think Washington allows nurses, any nurse, registered nurses, to give recommendations. But most other states require a physician. We have the injury exception, which allows sudden onset. And other states have seen that as being a huge loophole. And all you have to do is watch them the documentaries on how that is used in other states. One of the other problems is that the doctor does not have to examine records. The doctor gets a medical history. And if you look at, again, going back to Oregon and other states, it seems to be certain doctors where people gravitate to and are more likely to get permission from. And, obviously, even if you wanted to say if you look at the number of patients in other states that are getting it for cancer and all these other truly serious illnesses that obviously we're compassionate about and concerned about, it's very few that actually get it for that. It's almost
And Dr. Glassman definitely talked about, you know, certain doctors that people seem to go to again and again and again in other states. One last question for you, if I could, Chief Shigori. So I hear your concerns, and those were definitely raised, you know, during the debate on this bill. But it is the law of the state now. So what do you do? What do you tell your officers to do with this?
My position is that I think we have to seize it all, because there's no way you can prove a case without the evidence. Despite this, and that's going to end up with lawsuits. And part of the other problem that's going to come about is it's going to hamper drug investigations in another way, in that we have to file a subpoena or an affidavit to request the records from Health and Human Services. Well, there's no exemption from that from public records laws. So if I suspect Joe Smith down the road of dealing marijuana, I want to find out if he's got a medical marijuana card or is a caregiver. I have to file an affidavit with the state, which is going to be a public record.
To get that information.
To get that, which they could turn around and request under public records laws. It's not exempt under 91A.
Well, Chief Shigori, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Andrew Shigori again. He's the police chief in Tufton Borough, talking about the state's new medical marijuana law. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Your questions, comments, concerns about what this new law means for the Granite State are welcome. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org. And Representative Schlackman, I have to ask you, since this was your bill, boy, a huge headache, he says, for law enforcement.
Well, and I have great sympathy for law enforcement, because certainly prescription drug abuse is a major part of what they're dealing with, and they see it every day. My sense is, in going through this with patients and providers, is that the patients that we're going to be serving under this law are not a problem for law enforcement. They're probably not even on their radar most of the time, because these people are, many of them are already illegally using very quietly. And they're not coming before law enforcement. They're not abusing the drugs. They're not diverting the drugs. Will that happen with some? It could. But again, I think that the list is not something that's going to have a go-around so that anybody with severe pain can automatically get this. I think that the hoops that have to be jumped through are pretty strict. Yes, we do have nurses who can prescribe, because we heard from a lot of nurses who work in pain clinics who already prescribe narcotics, who are not, then the narcotics aren't working well. So I think that we did a good job, including the nurse practitioners, in terms of meeting patient need. And again, I don't think this is an invitation for, an end run around the law. I hear what he's saying about some of the issues, and I think this is one of the things we'll have to see how it plays out. And the advisory law enforcement will be represented on the advisory council, and I think this is something that they will be looking at very closely. But I feel that some of the problems they anticipate happening may not happen at all, and it's our feeling that they won't happen.
Dr. Glassman, one of the other aspects of this law that we haven't talked about is that not only does a patient have to have one of a limited number of illnesses, but they also have to have, I believe it's a 3-month relationship with a doctor before they can, get this card. And that's supposedly going to help with the doctor shopping issue. I wonder what you think.
Yeah, in general, the 3-month, patient-clinician relationship, because I don't want to exclude the nurse practitioners
right,
as we talk about this. In general, that's the theme of the bill's language, although there are provisions where if someone is being seen for the first time and has had the condition for 3 months and the clinician is able to have enough information to feel comfortable, they could theoretically certify a diagnosis without seeing that person directly for those 3 months. So certainly part of the reason for the 3-month interaction was to be able to give enough time for clinicians to really use really probably other options before getting to therapeutic cannabis in the first place. And to address, law enforcement's concern, certainly if someone is being certified for a diagnosis, if they're using the medication, if they're using the therapeutic cannabis, clinicians could order urine testing to verify that there are metabolites of that cannabis in their system. And if the test shows that what you're certifying the person for and they're taking it is in their system, well, then they're not diverting some of it, maybe not any of it. So I think the key is going to be education for the prescribing clinicians, or actually the certifying clinicians, to understand the issues of what are the appropriate diagnoses, how much time do you need to sort of interact with that patient to make sure that what you are certifying them for is appropriate, and how to avoid the risk of ultimately the wrong people getting what's being certified.
Let's take another call. Lots of people who want to jump in our conversation. The number 1-800-892-6477. And Caroline's calling from Wilmot. Hi, Caroline. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I have a question about the relationship between state law enforcement and federal law enforcement in the state of Montana, where there was a therapeutic cannabis law. The federal law enforcement people came in, shut down all of the dispensaries and seized the inventory and actually brought charges against people who were certified to dispense.
Yeah,
so I just wonder.
It's a great question, Caroline. Yeah, when was that, by the way? Can you refresh my memory?
It was less than 2 years ago. It was 2 years ago, maybe.
Really? Okay.
They did that, and the reason I know that is because I had been with my parents, one of whom was suffering with bladder cancer, and gotten therapeutic cannabis legally, and right at that time, it was 2012, I guess, early 2012. The federal law enforcement people came in and shut everything down.
Wow. Well, Caroline, this is a great point. I did want to ask both of you about it. And I think, Dr. Glassman, you first. What about the fact that this is still illegal at the federal level? How does that affect you as a physician?
Well,
I'm going to prescribe something now. I know I'm not supposed to say prescribe. I'm going to recommend something now that's still illegal at the federal level.
Right. So it's important to understand that there are not the alternative treatment centers in existence in a brick-and-mortar setting just yet. So today, if someone came to my office and said, I would like therapeutic cannabis, we couldn't get it for them because obviously there's nowhere for them to go today. The four centers aren't up and running as of yet. But obviously, I think, you know, if you're interacting with patients, they have to understand that if they have a federal job, let's say they're an interstate truck driver, that they're going to run into the state versus federal sort of difference in the situation. Ultimately, I think that if you are certifying someone and you have the records that show that it's appropriate as a treatment option for this person, you'll be able to support why it is that you're certifying it for that patient.
It's really tricky, Representative Schlachman. I'm glad you called, Caroline, this federal versus state distinction.
Yeah, she's brought up a really important point and one that I know the Attorney General's office was very concerned about because it still is against federal law no matter what the state does. I don't know the details of Montana, but I know one of the concerns is making sure that the dispensaries aren't so big that it looks like they're producing more than for a designated patient population. And our law specifically says how much each dispensary can grow per patient that they're treating. So we're trying not to run into that problem that Montana had.
Thank you very much for calling in, Caroline. More of your calls after a short break. Keep it right here.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
The eponymous prize in NHPR's summer car raffle is, in fact, a brand new car of your choice. If you're our grand prize winner, you can choose from any car from Grapponi Automotive Group's dealerships, Ford, Honda, Toyota, Scion, Mazda, or Hyundai. Support the station you love and the news you rely on, and get in on the raffle. Tickets are just $50 each or 3 for $100 at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-NHPR today.
Partly sunny across New Hampshire today. Slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs lower 70s for the North Country, ranging to upper 70s in southern New Hampshire. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Opera North performing Rodgers and Hammerstein South Pacific and Donizetti's Lucia starting August 6th at the Lebanon Opera House. Tickets 603-448-0400 or operanorth.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire gets ready for the new medical marijuana law. Join us with your questions or comments about how this new law will work, what it includes, what it doesn't. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. We go now to the state of Maine, where Susan Sharon is waiting. She's a reporter for Maine Public Radio, and Maine has had medical marijuana on the books for more than a decade. Susan's been covering it for a long time. Susan, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So what does Maine's law say, Susan, about who can give patients marijuana? Here in New Hampshire, just to let you know, we'll have 4 dispensaries, no home grow option.
Right. So our system is different than that. We have 8 dispensaries in Maine, and we also have a system for authorized patients to grow their own medicine or to buy it from a registered caregiver. In addition to a dispensary. And the caregiver system is a network of about, best estimate right now, about 1,700 people. I think we're up to roughly 32,000 patients between the dispensaries and the caregiver network.
So the caregivers aren't necessarily medical professionals. They're people who grow it and cultivate it and give it out to patients?
That's correct. The caregivers, unlike the patients do not have to be registered. You can voluntarily register with the state as a patient. You do have to have authorization from a physician. But as a caregiver, you do have to register with the state, and you are limited in the amount of patients that you can treat and grow for. So in other words, you can grow for 5 other people and yourself. And you can never have, no one can ever have more than 2.5 ounces of marijuana in possession at any time.
Wow, though, compared to our system that is planned right now anyway, yours sounds pretty wide open in terms of who can provide this.
It is pretty wide open. And what's really interesting about Maine is initially when this passed, there was a lot of wariness about what it might mean for the potential for abuse by young people and adults and, you know, whether it would, you know, make the black market explode. And that there were concerns about by law enforcement about what it would mean around dispensaries. But what has happened really is there have not been the degree of trouble that some predicted. The dispensaries, they're not being raided. It's not the same story as California. The caregivers, seem to be, occasionally there are conflicts with law enforcement, and I think law enforcement would say, look, it's a very, very gray area for us. It makes it difficult for us to figure out whether someone is a legitimate patient. It takes us more time to figure out whether a grow operation is authorized or not. But other than that, the problems that I think had been predicted have not come to pass, and what we've actually seen is a relaxing of some of the rules and regulations since this was passed by the voters.
Because it hasn't, some of those issues have not come to pass.
Well, and also because I think really the caregivers are a very organized network. These are people, some of them, who have been growing marijuana for a long time. They know what strains to grow. They know, they have learned over the years what works for different types of conditions for patients. And they're very well organized, both at the legislative level and with each other through social media. So they've been very effective at the State House in trying to make what's practical for them work.
So some of the concerns have been set aside. What would you say, Susan, some of the current challenges and controversies are surrounding this as Maine sort of enters that more mature phase on medical marijuana?
Well, I just heard you talking about, you know, the federal and the conflict with federal law. That always remains out there. But again, we have not seen other than certain places where the federal law intersects with the state. I'm thinking about university campuses and college students, for example, who want to use on campus, things like that, or at a housing authority. You see those conflicts, but we haven't had the raids from the feds. It's still out there. I think there's concern from the medical community, even though we now have approximately 200 doctors that have recommended medical marijuana for patients to some extent, but there's still extern for the doctors association here from the Maine Medical Association that, you know, that it will result in more abuse by some people and that it is in conflict with the federal law.
Well, Susan, good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Susan Sharon, reporter for Maine Public Radio. Again, she's been covering the issue of medical marijuana in Maine for a long time. The number for you to join us with your questions about New Hampshire's new law on this is 1-800-892-6477. Ken is waiting in Antrim. Hi, Ken. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just wondering, I have a doctor who's been waiting for this to be approved so he can get me a card. But am I going to have to now wait 2 or 3 years for New Hampshire to get their act together so I can buy it legally in the state of New Hampshire? Or can I go to Vermont or Maine, as I just heard from?
Yeah, right. That's a great question, one that I had, too. If I could ask real quickly, Ken, the condition you have that makes your doctor think that this would help you.
I have a severe back injury. I have had 5 different back operations, and the medications that I was on, I was on an earlier show talking the same topic, and I was on morphine sulfate, methadone. I was on so many drugs to try to alleviate the pain, and the side effects were horrible.
Yeah.
And they caused me more pain and other horrible conditions, and marijuana doesn't.
Well, Ken, and your question is a good one and one that I had as well. So two questions actually following up from Ken. First of all, the question he wanted to know, Representative Schlachman, his doctor's ready, thinks he needs it. Is he going to have to wait 2 years?
Yeah, Ken, I'm sorry you just brought up the sad part about this bill and that you are going to have to wait until the dispensaries are running. The certification process requires actually that your card identify which dispensary you're using. And so we have patients that have been waiting who are not exactly celebrating because they have between 18 months and 2 more years before they can legally do it. You can't go to another state and bring it in.
His card says only for use in dispensary
New Hampshire,
X.
Yes, with a specific dispensary. So, there's almost more incentive for people like Ken to go to Maine and Vermont or Massachusetts and live there for a while so that they can continue the treatment that they need and the pain and get the pain relief they need right now. But that's the sad reality.
Okay.
And it's the strictness.
And his specific injury, we all know back injuries are very painful. He's had a bunch of surgeries. It sounds like he doesn't qualify, though, Dr. Glassman, under the list of conditions we talked about earlier.
Well, I think realizing, you have to have the condition and the symptoms. So obviously, this brings in the question that law enforcement brought up of chronic pain issues. Looking at the list here, unless somehow it would be a spinal cord injury question, which I don't know the specifics, he probably wouldn't qualify. But can understand your physician right now could prescribe you FDA-approved cannabinoid medications to see if that helps you. It's not exactly the same thing as therapeutic cannabis, but it may be an alternative. Not giving you specific advice here, but obviously until the centers are up and running, there may be another option that is something considered.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would like to jump in, though, because there is that exception. And he just described a long-term doctor-patient relationship, a long-term trial with lots of other medications that he said didn't work as well or weren't effective or had side effects. And I think that if his physician documented his what sounds like a very debilitating situation where he has severe pain, that there, it is chronic, they have tried other things, that it's possible that the Department of Health and Human Services would agree with the doctor.
That's one of those case by case
basis.
It's
a very individual case by case basis. But it sounds like Ken has a lot of documentation as to what his needs are.
Well, Ken, good luck to you as you work through that. And thanks for calling in. I have a couple emails that I want to share with you. This is from Dennis in Barrington, who says, every medication I take comes with a list of possible side effects. Would the same be true of medical marijuana? If so, what would that include? Dennis says, in the 1970s, I worked at a major pharmaceutical company that took a THC formulation to clinical trials. However, some of the patients in the trials reported hallucinations as well as other side effects, and no efforts were made to take the drug to market. So two interesting points there, Dr. Glassman, from Dennis. Dennis, thank you for the email.
Right. Well, certainly one of the concerns about therapeutic cannabis was the concern of the potential for either psychiatric or psychotic changes in especially in adolescence, obviously. So I think what's brought up is certainly the fact that given the fact that therapeutic cannabis is not undergoing controlled trials,
because it's not federally approved, doesn't go through the federal process.
We're not going to know what some of the side effects are, assuming that. If it's grown the right way, if you'll have the centers, and the growers that are doing it appropriately, but still, any one patient, something could affect them in a very different way than anyone else, and there's not going to be a list to go back to say, watch out for this.
Are you worried about this as a doctor?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why this is not a prescribing situation. This is a certifying situation, because again, theoretically, using therapeutic cannabis is only after other things haven't worked.
Right, and that's what the law says. You can't prescribe it until you've determined other things work.
Unless you're in the situation where it's a sudden onset, you've got, to go through the approval process with Health and Human Services. So theoretically, the risk-benefit ratio of someone's had a disease for a long time, the symptoms are there, nothing's worked, is that you know, more of a risk than not giving them something that may help them. I think that's where, sure, we're always going to be concerned because we don't want to do any harm to any patients. And I think that's one of the issues that you're not going to know in a therapeutic cannabis situation right now, what may happen to someone.
Representative Slackman, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to jump in. Susan Sharon brought up a really good point that although, as the doctor said, this is not something that we know a lot about from a controlled studies point of view, this is a plant that's been in existence and used for thousands of years. And as Sharon said, or Susan said, the caregivers, the providers, in our case, the alternative treatment center personnel, know a lot about this drug. They know what strains are more effective with which kinds of things and what doses tend to work in which kinds of things, situations. So that I think that although medically we may not know a lot about it, we have people out there that have been in the field using this and in other states for a really, really long time. And that's when we visited the Maine dispensary, the people working there actually had come from other states with a long history of using this therapeutic cannabis.
Let's take another call. This is William in Concord. Hi. William, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to chime in on quite a few things, mostly because I am a disabled vet after putting in 10 years in the service. I had my first back surgery back in 1988 at the Bethesda Naval Hospital. So a lot of it was interns standing around trying to figure out what they were doing. And I was taken out of my position as a security policeman and put into basically a pencil pusher, which was not what I liked, but I stayed in. I put in 10 years.
A pencil pusher, you said, basically. A desk job, William.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was tired of that. So I decided to get out. And as time has passed, my body has gotten worse. I've got more things wrong with me than most doctors. The new doctor that I was just given, who was the head of the facility doctor, said that you're too involved and we're going to have to put you on with someone else. So that's pretty bad when you hear that from someone that's in charge.
So, William, what's your bottom line on medical marijuana?
I absolutely think that it can help.
And you think it could help you with pain and so forth?
Well, that, you know, I'm on so many drugs. 30 pills.
Wow.
I've got ulcerative colitis. I've got arthritis from neck to tailbone. I've got my right kidney. For some reason, they don't know which died.
Well, William, wow. I mean, and I'm sorry to cut you off there. We're heading close to the end of the hour, but boy, good luck with all those health issues. And, you know, Dr. Glassman, there are people like William who take so many medications, and not only are they suffering from those illnesses, but also then the medications start interacting, and that can make you feel bad. So here's somebody saying, look, help me out here.
Right. And again, you know, with you know, that many medications, what's helping, what's not helping, what's hurting, it's hard to know. And will therapeutic cannabis improve the situation? I don't think any certifying clinician will be able to tell a patient that it will work for you, guaranteed. That'll probably not be the case. But if it's something that's worth trying, then certainly, you know, it sounds like, you know, this last caller, you know, might meet the criteria, but no way of knowing if it'll really help.
One of the things that he brought up was the amount of pills he's taking. And I heard from a nurse practitioner on the borderline of Maine and New Hampshire who works in a pain clinic. And what she told me is that her patients from Maine are on many reduced medications. Prescription drugs can be reduced because they're able to access marijuana, and it is able to help them in a way so she can reduce their prescription drug medication. So I think that raising the point of how many drugs does one really need and are they being effective and can this make help patients, alleviate them and allow them to reduce the amount of prescription drugs is really important.
Well, William, thank you for calling. And here's an email from Eric in Manchester. I'll give this to you, Representative Schlackman. He says, nobody talks about the economic potential. Why only 4 dispensaries, plenty of empty storefronts, downtown areas that could use the boost these centers would provide. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a really good point. And actually, my concern is that people are going to see this as a moneymaker and a business proposition and want to charge a lot for the medical marijuana or the therapeutic cannabis. But we stuck to four because we want to start slowly. We are a small state. We don't want to open up places everywhere. It's part of the controls, really.
We haven't even talked about how towns are going to go about this. I mean, now it'll only be four towns or cities.
Yeah.
It is. And,
yeah.
You know, given that there's only four, that's not going to be a problem for most places.
But there are businesses out there. I've gotten phone calls in the last 2 weeks from people who want to open up dispensaries, and we've had long conversations about it and about the process. So I know that there's great interest in it, but, you know, we're starting slow. We're being careful. We've got a careful governor, and I think that that's the right approach right now.
Okay, so first step is, again, 45 days from the signing of this law, Representative Schlachtman, an advisory council is put into place, and then what?
Well, DHHS is already starting on the regulations and the rulemaking, and that's a huge amount of work. My hat goes off to them. I think they figure it's going to take two full-time people to get that going. And
Just two full-time people.
Well, you know, we make people do the work of 10. So,
Dr. Glassman, just moving forward, what are you going to be looking for as this law rolls out?
I think we'll be looking for how the Medical Society will work with DHHS and the Board of Medicine to really ensure that the clinician process will be going along appropriately, ultimately educating our providers on how to be part of the system.
All right. Well, and as it rolls out, we will definitely be looking at it again for sure. I want to thank you both very much for coming in. Dr. Glassman, good to see you. Thank you,
you
for
too.
Being here.
Thank you.
Dr. Stuart Glassman, rehabilitation specialist at Granite Physiatry, president-elect of the New Hampshire Medical Society. And Donna Schlachtman, good to have you too. Thank you for your
pleasure
time.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Representative Donna Schlachtman, Democrat from Exeter, primary sponsor of the medical marijuana bill. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our interns are Faith Meixel and Catherine Muzzy. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.